There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Live sport, the latest headlines and top debate. This is The Grill, live from Barasti with Tom Urquhart on DubaiEye1038.
Good afternoon and welcome to The Grill back at Barasti up here on the top deck. We're up at the rooftop bar garden. So do come and see us if you are in the vicinity. With you through until 7 o'clock this evening. New timings taking into account the change of the clocks. Clocks going back in the United Kingdom. So in order for us to go live to our Premier League game at 7 o'clock, we are now on from 4 till 7. Lots to look forward to over the show. England in action down in Australia. We've got an early kickoff in the Premier League for you. Stoke against Leicester. We'll let you know team news and, of course, any goals that take place going in that game will be coming your way first. Rugby League World Cup ongoing, and rugby fans are well catered for this afternoon, with plenty of club rugby in the Northern Hemisphere and the first of the Autumn Internationals. It is the Barbarians against New Zealand kicking off at 7 o'clock, so plenty for us to get our heads around. We'll do so with the Grill expert panel in just a few moments' time, and as always, encourage you to have your say. Text us now on 400. Have your say and on Twitter at DubaiEyeSport, or better still, come down here, sample the delights of Barasti on a Saturday evening. Beautiful evening down here, big crowd in already, and if you're looking for somewhere to watch your sport, you can't ask for better than the big screen down at Barasti. If it's not on that one, it'll be on any of the other screens, 20 plus dotted around the facility. Please do get involved in the show, as always your opinions count. This is The Grill, we're live from Barasti where the game is always on.
Live from Barasti, bringing you the biggest sports stories right now.
Indeed we are, and who we're going to bring it to these stories to you with? Well, our Grill panel joining us today. We've got Mark Archer and Ross Christ, who are working through the big stories, not just of the weekend, but of the week as well. Ross, I'm going to start with you. Good afternoon to you. Big story, big talking point of the week for you in sport?
It's got to be, you got to start with the World Series from back home. The Houston Astros, the 2007 World Series champions. It's the first time that they've ever won the World Series. And with everything going on with the city of Houston, with Hurricane Harvey coming through and causing massive flooding, you just have to feel for everyone in Houston. And they finally got something, a glimmer of hope with these Houston Astros. And they were by far, hands down, the best team in the playoffs all season long. They got it together. We'll touch on that later in the show. But it's just been an amazing World Series if you got to catch any of the games.
As you know well, it's not my strong point, American sport, but even I have been inspired by this World Series. Was it fitting that it came down to the final game?
Yeah, these teams were just going back and forth, and honestly, I think this is the best World Series I've ever witnessed. Right. I mean, these teams just the one game 13-12, that would be like a 7-6 soccer match or something like that. You just don't see that. It's so you got to see some amazing hitting, some amazing defense. Then at the end of the World Series, we got to see some good pitching. It was a real coaches duel, and it went down to game 7. You have to feel for the LA Dodgers. They had a great team. They put together an awesome squad. I like what Dave Roberts has really done out there on the West Coast with that Dodgers team. That Dodgers team is going to be there next year out of the National League, and the Houston Astros will be there out of the AL League. Something interesting about Houston, they're the first team ever to win an NL pennant and an AL pennant, because you remember a couple years ago they had to switch leagues. So they're the first baseball team in the history of baseball to do that, and they did that this week.
That was certainly one of the big talking points of the week, and I'm assuming Mark Archer is probably the one you were going to choose as well.
I was indeed, yeah. It was a fascinating World Series, and I was rooting it. And just not a lot between these two teams. I did predict it to go to Game 7, but I thought the Dodgers, they had home field advantage. They had four of the matches in LA as opposed to three in Houston, and I thought they might just have enough to get over the line. But it's a wonderful fairy tale story for Houston. First, as I say, Ross, their first World Series title. Good for the city. It's been a tough year down in Texas and in Houston, so that was good. But, you know, with Tom, it's never just one thing with me. One sporting highlight, I guess lots of things to talk about tonight. Spurs, European domination of Real Madrid. That was a big turn up at home. I guess we're going to touch on that. Patrice Evra, well, he was doing his best impersonation of Eric Cantona only a couple of nights ago, and the repercussions of Patrice Evra. I've been down, lucky enough to spend some time at the beautiful Saadiyat Beach Golf Club the last couple of days, the Fatima Bin Mubarak Ladies Open. That's drawing to a conclusion over the last couple of days. And then looking ahead, Tom, it's the Barbars. The All Blacks taking on the Barbars at Twickenham. Not a Northern Hemisphere player on site. There's 10 former New Zealanders, All Blacks, playing for the Barbars, taking on the All Blacks. It's a New Zealand rugby festival at Fortress Twickenham this evening. Shame it's not England.
Let's just pick up on the Patrice Evra story. Obviously, this is following on from Patrice Evra kicking one of his own fans in the head before his side's Europa League defeat at Vitoria on Thursday night. Footage showing the 36-year-old former Man United defender aiming an acrobatic kick at a supporter at the side of the pitch during the warm-up. Are we any clearer as to what prompted this reaction?
Well, I think Marseille have been in some poor form recently, and what baffles me a little bit is how any fans or spectators got so close to the players warming up. You know, in European football or in any football stadium, the crowd is usually far back, and they can't get access to the players. But apparently, one of the Marseille supporters had been jeering at Evra for about half an hour while the players warmed up, and after a while, Patrice Evra head over to the fans to have a bit of a genial conversation about why you're giving them such a hard time. The discussion must have gone on, and he felt a way to drop kick or do a karate kick, acrobatic kick against the fan. Now, he was sent off before the match started, which I thought then, did that mean they start with 10 players because the match hadn't started? But no, they could make a replacement, but he was sent off before the match, and now just to go through what's happened subsequently, now he's also been suspended, I guess, why they have a bit of a investigation to what actually happened. So, unfortunate circumstances. I just question how supporters have got so close to their team warming up pre-match. You can't imagine that happening in many football clubs.
It raises a number of questions. I mean, if he had abuse directed at him, I mean, we've seen this in other sports, haven't we? Obviously, we've got one very high-profile one at the moment, and pointed one being Ben Stokes as well, and there's a lot more details coming out in the Ben Stokes incident. I mean, nothing can defend what Patrice Evra did, but are Marseille taking a very harsh line on him at the moment?
Well, they have come out and said that he's suspended. I don't think his contract's been cancelled, but you would be led to be think he wasn't actually playing. He was actually a substitution for the match. So yeah. He wasn't going to start the match. He got sent off before it. Interesting, just to read here on a BBC website that our good friend and now Dubai resident Mikel Sylvester has come out and said he's probably got now no future at Marseille. You can't do that with your fans. But it's just an unfortunate circumstance. It's not the first controversial incident we've seen Patrice Evra in. Remember the Luis Suarez incident when he was at Liverpool, Man United. There was a racial issue there. And look, he's been a fine player. He's had a great career, and let's hope he's not remembered for this. But it's unfortunate. You just you don't wish it, but you got to argue and question again the policing situation. How are fans so close to the teammates accessible to warming up? There's usually a massive gap there for health and safety reasons, for crowd control. And I just wonder how the fans had got so close. But Patrice Evra apparently climbed over the billboards to confront the spectators to encourage the incident to happen. And you just wonder that someone should have stepped in before this actually escalated.
Shouldn't laugh, but can't help it, really.
Might be training for a new sport. I mean, he's 36. A lot of these old footballers are going to miss martial arts afterwards. So who knows? But you don't know the whole story. We'll see what they come out with. They're going to interview, I think, some of the fans that were involved. But it's a sad day when you start drop kicking your own fans at your home ground.
I'm picking up on another story you mentioned there. I think it's worth mentioning now. I know we'll talk about it in more detail throughout the show. But Spurs beating Real Madrid. Now, that's got not just Spurs fans talking, but football fans around the world talking. Obviously, a home advantage for Spurs, but anyone that beats Real Madrid with the stable of stars that they have, home or away, is deserving of comment. Is this a turning point for Spurs? We've always seen them as an also-ran in the Premier League. Some might be, a little bit surprised to see them in the Champions League over the last couple of seasons, but they've certainly put down a marker this season.
They've definitely laid down a marker. And, look, I guess there's a couple of talking points out of this. Firstly, wonderful performance by Spurs. They were 3-0 up. They were dominating the European champions, the La Liga champions. And then, or is it the decline of Real Madrid? We've seen they've had a pretty poor run in La Liga the last few weeks. They're slipping down the table there. Zinedine Zidane, for all he won last year, and he's FIFA Coach of the Year, is suddenly under pressure for his job. Is it the decline of Real Madrid and Spurs got them at a good time? But great performances by the likes of Dele Alli. Harry Kane's been phenomenal, but Dele Alli really stood up when it counted and scored the first couple of goals. And then really Real Madrid with the consolation, I think it was a penalty to Cristiano Ronaldo with 10 minutes to go. It was a dominating performance at their new ground. So there's been question marks about how they adapt to playing at Wembley. Yeah. And great performance. And look, I don't think they're good enough to win the Premier League. I don't think they're in the club. We saw them last week. Jose Mourinho shut them down, and some would say a masterclass defensively, but they didn't look like winning that match. I don't think they'll win the Premier League, but they're the sort of team in Europe, on a one-off game or a two-legged match, that just might cause some damage if they get together. You do question, though, if they do lose Kane, they do lose Dele Alli, if they have the strength and depth. We saw that when Harry Kane was missing against Man United. They didn't really create a lot. Didn't look like scoring goals if the players aren't there. But, I mean, Pochettino's done a wonderful job. It really can Spurs hold on to him. Do the likes of Real Madrid come knocking at his door quite soon as well? And their players who are standing out. Can Spurs keep those players at the club? Can they show that they have ambitions to match the best in Europe? But wonderful performance. If you're a Spurs fan, it's a great time. If you're, say, an Arsenal fan, probably not such a good time, because for me, Spurs are now, in the last 18 months to 2 years, they are the dominant team in North London by a long way.
Biggest team in North London, is that a fair assessment from Mark Archer? Your thoughts, please, 4001. Spurs on the ascendancy or Real Madrid on the descendancy?
I think Spurs have it. I think they've, just like Mark Archer said, they are the team in North London right now. They have been outplaying a lot of their opponents. They sit right now third in the table with 20 points. It would be nice to see if they can keep this momentum going. They have a very, very, very weak Crystal Palace side this week. So if they can get the 3 points again against Palace and keep moving up in the table to challenge the two Manchesters, it could come down to the end. I agree with what Mark said. I don't think they're going to win the Premier League this year. I think they're going to be maybe top four, right where they're at, right where we're seeing them. But I see the Manchesters, one of the cities, or United being the champion of the Premier League. But they have been playing some good football as of late.
A lot of early kickoffs around the world at the moment. In the UK, Bristol City are taking on Cardiff in the early kickoff in the Championship. No goals in that one for you as yet. Keep you posted on that. Early over in Spain as well, where Valencia are taking on Leganés in the early. No goals in that one. There are goals, however, down in Australia. Or there have been a little earlier on. Newcastle Jets beating Wellington Phoenix by 3-0. Wellington losing again, Arch. What's going on there?
Oh, they better get the game together, the old Phoenix. They always struggle in the A-League, aren't
they? What's happening?
Oh, I don't know.
It's all that travel. Perth Glory are taking on Adelaide United as we speak into the second half there. No goals in that one. That one's live at the moment. There's also a couple of live games over in... Well, over where, fellas? If I tell you that Kasımpaşa are taking on Boruspor, and it's 2-0 at the moment in the second half, and it's also Kayserispor taking on Trabzonspor, which league is that?
I would vote with Turkey. The Turkish League. I'm not sure what it's called.
The Turkish Super League.
There you go.
Correct. Well done to you. So Kasımpaşa, I should say, taking on Boruspor, 2 goals to the good in that one. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we will we're going to be talking to a current England rugby international. We'll talk rugby, find out what he's doing here in the UAE, and get his thoughts ahead of the autumn internationals. That's next.
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, where the game is always on.
Welcome back to The Grill, broadcasting live from Barasti, where the game is always... Weather's changed, hasn't it? I know we shouldn't be talking... Oh, actually, we should be talking weather, because Mark Archer's with us at the moment. Weather's definitely changed, hasn't
beautiful
it?
Beautiful weather here in the UAE. As I said earlier, I've been down at the... lucky enough to be at the beautiful Sadiat Beach Golf Club the last couple of days. It's been stunning there for the Fatima Bin Mubarak Ladies Open. It looks wonderful on TV. The ladies have had a great time, but the weather is absolutely fabulous. We're sitting up here at the rooftop garden at Barasti, and it's sensational weather. So if you're looking for something to do this afternoon, catch some rugby, of course, on the big screen at 7 o'clock, hopefully. Barbar's taking on the All Blacks at Twickenham. This is the place to come, because you can sit outside now, enjoy an adult beverage, and just relax and kick back. It is wonderful river. Even you might see Ross taking a dip later on down in the water.
Really?
I was here yesterday, actually, for the Corona Sunset Festival. Duke Dumont was on, and boy, did he put on a show. I had no idea who Mr. Duke Dumont was, but if you put him on that stage and with the music that was coming out and the laser show and everything, it was incredible. Well done to Barasti. Good job, Mr. Duke.
Let's just bring you some breaking news, get the reaction from the boys as well. It's Formula One related. Felipe Massa, is to retire from Formula One at the end of this season. The Brazilian intended to quit F1 at the end of 2016, returned to Williams after Valtteri Bottas moved to Mercedes following the retirement of world champion Nico Rosberg. Massa, though, drawing a line under it. I mean, he's not had the best of seasons, so are we that surprised?
No, but he's had a nice career, hasn't he? He's won 11 Grand Prix and said that he wanted to work out whether he was going to have a team for next year. Williams have been dilly-dallying around. They haven't made a decision on his future. So he said, enough's enough, and I'll go and do something else. That's not, wouldn't be surprising to see him come picked up somewhere else, but he hasn't committed to a team for next year. His contract's up at the end of the season. Williams haven't renewed it, so he said, well, I'll retire. So, you know, great career for him, the Brazilian. Again, 11 Grand Prix wins. That's a pretty good record, I would have thought.
We'll have more reaction on that one in just a few moments' time. I want to turn our attention to all things rugby. Why? Some cracking games in the Northern Hemisphere a little later on. None more so than a return of something of a rugby institution. The Barbarians are back in business. They're back at Twickenham. They take on New Zealand later. And whenever you mention the Barbarians, comes history. So the Barbarians are at Twickenham against New Zealand. There has been a game already today. Mark Archer's got the result.
Yeah,
on that one for
early kickoff. I guess the start of the autumn internationals, so to speak. It was the Australian Wallabies were over in Tokyo taking on Japan. Big win for the Wallabies, 63-30. They will go on next week, and it's a cracking. They go to Cardiff and take on Wales in the first of the autumn internationals proper. I think it's fair to say. And then, of course, that Barbars match at Twickenham tonight, 7 p.m. UAE time. It's a shame that New Zealand have had to travel all the way to England to take on a team with 10 other New Zealanders and coached by Robbie Deans, a New Zealander, but that's the way it is these days. It's a shame that a few more Northern Hemisphere players aren't involved, just as experience to taking on the All Blacks, because a lot of players don't get that opportunity. But it'll be a wonderful occasion. I'm sure it'll be a spectacle of free-flowing rugby, a very entertaining affair, and a few players on the Barbars with a point to prove, the likes of Julian Savia, obviously with a few issues with not being in the current New Zealand team. But it will be fascinating. 7 p.m. this evening, the autumn internationals really get underway. The Barbars at home at Twickenham taking on the All Blacks.
One man who I'm sure will be watching on with interest and of course, wishing that he was out there, not just this weekend, but over the next couple of weekends for the autumn internationals. Currently sidelined, unfortunately, by injury, but gives him an opportunity to come out to the UAE in the next couple of days for a bit of rehab. It is, of course, England and Wasps. Loose head prop Matt Mullen joins us live on the line. Matt, thanks so much indeed for taking time to speak to us. Barbarians, does that get the blood boiling for you?
Yeah, it does. I think any player would love to get the invitation to go and play, particularly if you get the opportunity to go up against the All Blacks.
Coming for a bit of criticism over the last couple of days that there aren't enough Northern Hemisphere players, or any Northern Hemisphere players in that team, apart from the one that's on the subs bench as well. Is that something that you agree with, or should there be more of a balance?
I think ideally there would be. I think by virtue of being an invitational team, you want to try and get as many different types of people from different clubs and environments into that group as you can. But it's incredibly difficult. Professional era, clubs aren't going to want to release players. We've got matches on at the moment in the Northern Hemisphere. Lots of injuries across the clubs as well. So I think it's understandable why there aren't.
Yeah, something of an injury crisis on at the moment. A lot of chat about that in and around rugby. You are recuperating from your latest injuries. Put us in the picture of what happened and where you are with that rehab.
I'm actually due an operation on Monday morning. So I played the last round of the Premiership games against Northampton on Saturday. I injured my tricep. I need to have an operation, so I've had to miss out on England camp this week. But hopefully go in on Monday, get that sorted out, and like you said, come across for some rehab and warm weather and get to watch the autumn internationals.
Yeah, just talking of that England camp that you so sadly had to miss out on because of injury, I mean, who better to ask than a man who's been in that camp, in and around the team in recent years under Eddie Jones. Has the culture within the England, or training and otherwise, changed under Eddie?
I think the training has. I think the intensity of training, the attention to detail definitely went up a level when he came in. But I think it's more the fact that he just breeds confidence. he gets the players in a situation from how hard the training is. When you turn up to the games, you feel ready, you feel prepared. He breeds belief in what we're doing. When you're in camp, the knowledge you gain from being in and around those great players, you just feel like you're ready to go and play and win. And I think on the back of that, you've seen the confidence that once you get one or two wins, some of the games when they've been close or maybe haven't played that well, you manage to pick up more wins on the back of that.
Matt, just want to get your thoughts on the state of play of the Aviva Premiership so far this season. I know Tom talked about a lot of injuries, but if you look at the table, there's so many strong teams now. You talk about strength and depth, having a very intense, competitive Premiership, you know, top division of rugby. It can only lead through that when players do get picked for England in the squad, that they're battle hard and they're ready for that. But if you look at that, there's six or seven teams that could probably stake a claim to the Aviva Premiership title. Just how's it improved in your time, the depth of the Premiership?
Yeah, I think it's unrecognisable, especially over the last three or four seasons. The Premiership's always had the ability to throw out results that any team can beat anybody on their day, but now you're looking around and there literally isn't an easy game. Even teams that are near the bottom of the table, you don't fancy playing them, whether it's home or away. And like you said, I think that's only good for the competition. I think it's good for English rugby in general. I think it's good for the supporters to watch those high-quality games, but the fact that we've got so many English qualified players in the league, like you said, can only produce battle-hardened players and players that are at the top of their game ready to go and play for England.
One of the things that has led to is obviously England have had a wonderful 12 months to 18 months since that, well, I guess you could say it was a disaster of a last World Cup at home in the UK at England. Eddie Jones seems to have been harnessed those depth of players now. Did you get a feeling that he's starting now to look, it's a two-year plan, the focus was always about doing well at a World Cup. There's a few older players, I guess you could probably say maybe James Haskell is a good example of a guy who Eddie said, look, I don't know if you're going to be around in 2 years at the peak. He really wants to find guys who are going to now got 2 years to peak at the top of their game. So England are going to go fully primed into that World Cup in Tokyo in literally 2 years' time.
Yeah, I think James is slightly different because of coming off the back of injuries. I think Eddie's always been really open about if you're expecting to play for England, you've got to produce performances for the club. His big thing is about picking players that are on form. And anybody that comes back from an injury, you're going to struggle for a little bit of form. But James has been playing better with every game. But I think it just highlights that somebody that's as highly capped as him and highly regarded across the world in terms of rugby, if they're not quite at the peak of their powers, then Eddie's going to not pick you. And I think that just sets the tone for the rest of the squad, that everybody going into that environment knows they've got to be producing top-notch performances.
Looking at the Aviva Prem, your WASC team in action a little later on. They've got home advantage in the kickoff at 7 o'clock local time here in the UAE. Points in the bag for WASC today, or going back to your point, there's no such thing as an easy game in the Aviva Prem these days. Take you on Newcastle later.
Yeah, Newcastle have been playing really well this season, so I think home advantage does have some bearing on it, and you're always trying to win your home games because it will put you in a good position in the league, but Newcastle have been one of the form teams in the first five or six rounds, so I think it's going to be a tough game.
Matt, listen, you get the opportunity to sit back, watch international rugby, watch a bit of club rugby. I'm sure you'd rather be out there. All the best with your operation this coming week on Monday. And as you mentioned, you're here in the UAE at the end of next week. What are you doing next weekend?
I'm going to be watching the game, hopefully meeting some of the local rugby fans that are going down to watch. The warehouse have got a new big screen, an outdoor screen, so I think it's going to be a good atmosphere down at the Meridian Airport Hotel, so really looking forward to it.
Looking forward to that. We'll be catching up with you as well. Thanks so much indeed for your time. All the best, as I said, and enjoy the game.
Okay, thank you. Thanks a lot.
Big thanks to Matt Mullen there, current England international, and of course Wasps. He's co-captain of Wasps, in fact. He's the man who unfortunately has had to bow out of Eddie Jones' latest squad training. They were down in Portugal, I think, weren't they? Is that where they were training? Bit of warm weather?
Yeah, good. Yeah, exactly. And again, it's a shame because we've got the... It's a funny time because we've got the first of the team, New Zealand, there at Twickenham this evening, and then all the teams are really gearing up. There's no Aviva Prem this weekend. They go back to the Anglo-Welsh Cup, where it's very weakened sides usually are playing. So all the international teams are in camp, whether you be in Ireland. Ireland, of course, at home to South Africa next week. That'll be a cracking match. Wales will be back in Cardiff taking on the Aussie. England actually play Argentina next weekend, which will be another fascinating clash there. And the All Blacks head over to France, to Paris, to play the French. So all the teams are in camps. Eddie Jones, again, for me, really 2 years away from a Rugby World Cup, will be focused on getting players fit, getting them prepared, looking to see where guys are going to develop through that two-year plan as that. So it's a good thing that Matt's probably got his injury now. He'd probably get injury-free and then really build up towards that Rugby World Cup in Tokyo in 2 years' time. But it will be a very fascinating autumn in internationals. Just a shame the All Blacks aren't taking on England. But, yeah, they've got the Barbars tonight.
We will look forward to that. We'll have more ahead of the kickoff at 7 o'clock. It's going to be shown down here at Barasti if you're looking for somewhere to watch the game. Big thanks again to Matt Mullen. In town next week, down at the warehouse, as he was saying. He'll be around and about. You can find out more on his social media pages, and we'll try and get more details for Sports Night throughout the week as well. Let's take a short break. When we come back, we're going to jump into the World Series. As Ross Crist was saying, one of the best, if not the best ever. We'll tell you why after this.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Some team news ahead of the early kickoff in the Premier League. Stoke taking on Leicester. That one's just kicking off as we speak on the big screen down here at Barasti. Stoke have named an unchanged starting 11 following their 1-0 win over Watford last Saturday. Ryan Shawcross has been passed fit to play despite a few concerns he might miss out. There's also a return to the bench for Peter Crouch. Charlie Adam and Saido Berahino have to sit with the substitutes too. Leicester make just one change as defender Ben Chilwell is out with a knee injury. He's replaced by Shinji Okazaki. The striker comes into the side for his seventh Premier League start this season. Foxes have just 18 players in the league this season. Only Burnley, 17, have used fewer. So, Craig Shakespeare making his changes. Let's hear, though, now from the Stoke boss, Mark Hughes, ahead of this one.
Good performance. Good result against good, confident opposition. A result that I don't think people anticipated we were capable of. That wasn't the case in-house. We felt we needed to go there and do what we talked about, which maybe in previous games we weren't able to do. But now we're back on track. We're Stoke City. We're not going to win every game, but certainly we won't lose every game. And along the way we'll have good performances and not so good. But over the course of 38 games we'll be fine.
Those the thoughts of Stoke manager Mark Hughes. They've just kicked off. It's on the big screen down here at Barasti. Stoke against Leicester is your early kickoff in the Premier League, so keep it locked for that. We'll bring you all the goal updates as and when they go in. Let's turn our attention to the United States now. It's been a crazy week for baseball fans. Why? Ross Crist.
Well, the Houston Astros are World Series champions. In fact, the Houston Astros started out in 1962 as the Colt 45s. Then they changed their name in 1965 to the Astros, where they played in the National League up until 2012. Then in 2013, they switched over to the American League, and they put together a young team of players. And guess what? These players delivered Houston a championship.
As they play in their 56th year of franchise history, it has been a build toward 2017. And here they are on the brink of winning it all. Here's a ground ball right side, could do it. The Houston Astros are world champions for the first time in franchise history. All the drafting, all the scouting, the pieces that were added via trade or free agency for this stretch drive. These Astros are world champs.
Unbelievable. Another drought ends. Two great teams fighting. Truly a great World Series.
Charlie Morton still on the mound. This is his fourth inning of work. Astros lead 5-1. Pitch on the way. Round ball right side into the shift to his left out. Altuve has it in short right. Throws to first. And the Astros are 2017 World Series champions. For the first time ever, the Astros are baseball's best.
Well, it took them 56 seasons, but they got it done in dramatic fashion. Game 7 on the road at Dodger Stadium, and the Astros prevail. World Series champions. Who would have ever believed?
And the Houston Astros have claimed that city's first ever World Series championship.
party's over. The season is gone. When all is said and done, the Astros are the champions.
After losing Game 6 last night, they win the game 5-1 to take the World Series in 7 games.
They took Game 7 against the Los Angeles Dodgers. It was a remarkable World Series, up and down every single game. Great pitching, great hitting, great defense, great coaching, and it's just an amazing, amazing feat for these Houston Astros. In 2014, Sports Illustrated wrote an article on the Houston Astros saying that they predict them to win the 2017 World Series. So I have to tip my hat to Sports Illustrated magazine for saying this. And the reason they did that is because they put together a young team of core players. You saw Springer, the World Series MVP. Cora, he's been playing very, very good for them. AJ Hinch, their manager, has just been awesome. Alex Cora, their bench coach, will now leave their bench. He's going to take the manager spot for the Boston Red Sox. They're going to be losing a good assistant coach in him, but they have just been phenomenal all year long. And guess what? They had a 13.5 game lead over the rest of their division. And as of June 9th, they were 41-16, which is the best record in all of the AL. So the best team in the AL met the best team in the NL in the World Series, which is what you want to happen. And the Astros won. So there you have it.
Ross, they had to make a pretty big decision only maybe 6 weeks, 2 months ago around the trade deadline time. They had to find some extra pitching. They went out and got Justin Verlander. I guess that move in hindsight paid off. Will they keep him in the offseason, or will he go on to other pastures?
You don't know with Justin Verlander. He's won the championship now, and he's well-received down in Houston, but he is going to be sought after. He's a great arm. He's been there. He's done that. There's a lot of talk that he still might go back to Detroit at the end of the season, work something out with the Tigers. That has been his club for the majority of his career. But, yeah, what a great acquisition he was for them. I mean, what the play that he gave him from the pitcher spot, not necessarily in the World Series, but since the trade deadline, was nothing short of phenomenal.
And for you, what was the difference between the two teams? They were very evenly matched. You say some good starting pitching. Clayton Kershaw, obviously the ace for the Dodgers. Verlander, the ace pitcher for the Astros. Good hitting. What was the difference for you between the two teams?
You mentioned Clayton Kershaw there. He actually gave up 8 home runs in this World Series, which isn't very that's not like him. That's just not how he pitches. He's one of the best pitchers in the game. Most people would take him on the mound at all times, but he kind of didn't bring his top game to the World Series. So when you have your number one pitcher not playing his best game, you're going to have to say the Houston Astros have a competitive edge. And then you look at all the pitching that they have on their side of things. Charlie Morton, the ex-Pirate. Liriano, the ex-Pirate. Justin Verlander. They have a lot of depth in that bullpen, and I just thought that the pitching on the Houston side of things was just a little bit better than the Los Angeles Dodgers. But don't count out these Dodgers. They'll be back next year. They have a great, great team. And I love the play that they get out of the right fielder, Yasiel Puig.
Astros come out on top, went down to the final game. But was it a final worthy of the league? And when are these the top two teams in the league this season?
Hands down. These are the two best teams. And it's quite rare that you actually see it in sports nowadays with the playoff system where the two best teams end up doing it all year long. Because, guys, this is 162 games. Yeah. 162 games. I don't know any other sport in the world that plays that many games throughout the duration of the year. And teams always start off hot. And many times in baseball, they say you want to get out your bumps and bruises out of the way early. But they started off hot. They stayed hot through the All-Star break, through the trade deadline, through the playoffs. Both of these teams did. There was no real fallback. The Dodgers had a little bit of a month spell there where they had a little bit of a fallback. But it's quite rare to see what the Houston Astros did this year with a record of 41-16 in the middle of the summer.
A lot of chat. I mean, we talk a lot, don't we, about remarkable victories. We've spoken about Leicester in the past and their transformation. We've spoken about Exeter Chiefs and the rugby as well. Somebody last night I was talking to said that they thought the Exeter Chiefs' rise to fame was more impressive than Leicester's victory in the Premier League a couple of seasons ago, when you put it into context. Is it the same sort of thing for the Astros? Is that are we talking about it in the same way?
It just seems like 1 year ago we were sitting here at Barassi Beach talking about the same thing about the Chicago Cubs. Do you guys remember the Chicago Cubs? They had over a 100-year skid not winning the championship. Now the Houston Astros, they've been in the league for 56 years now, and they haven't won anything. So, and they've been on both sides of the league, the AL and NL side of things. So I wouldn't quite put it as big as a Leicester or a Chicago Cubs story, because Houston has had some success on they had some success with basketball, they had some success with football, but it's just really big because right now, Tom, as you know, and anyone who follows the news, Hurricane Harvey caused massive damage to Houston, the whole entire South Texas area, and J.J. Watt of the Houston Texans did a lot of fundraising for this team. Houston Astros came together with the Texans, tried to do a lot, so this part of the United States could use some good news, if you will, and the Houston Astros brought that.
So what's changed? I mean, because we talk about, you know, investment into teams, we talk about different mindsets as well. What's changed for the Astros?
I think they just kind of invested in themselves. Many times during in the past, I'd say not the past 3 years, but you go back before that, the Houston Astros were always sellers at the trade deadline. And to put this in the layman's terms, halfway through the season, they'd sell off their best assets and they get some young prospects. Well, this time they let their prospects develop, and they've kind of had this same core since around the 2014 era, and they've let them develop. And guess what? The Houston Astros are the first team in baseball to have a 100-loss season within the last 5 years and win a World Series. So it shows you, if you really invest in your young core players, if you invest in your farm system and you trust the process, any team in baseball can be a World Series champion.
I think it's fair to point out that the American League is pretty competitive. There's some big payrolls there. You look at the likes of the Yankees. You look at the likes of the Boston Red Sox. You've got to get past those two big clubs in the American League East to get to a World title. And you know, the Yankees are rebuilding. They're going to be strong next year. They've got a really young, talented team. Boston, you know, are going to retool. They've got the budget there. They've got the massive support. So it will be interesting to see whether the Astros can continue to be as good as they were. Can they win 100-plus games in next year's American League? Will be a lot of questions people will be asking, Ross.
Yeah, they're already wondering, can they do the repeat? And as you know, in most sports, it is a very, very hard to get back to the championship after you won the championship. It's no different in baseball. But they have locked up a lot of this young team. They picked up Cora's option for next year. They have the same coach, A.J. Hinch, on the bench. One thing that they're going to be missing is Alex Cora, the former big leaguer who mentioned earlier, who took the Boston Red Sox job. So he will be missed. He has a big presence inside of that clubhouse. So I do think they'll be competitive next year. I do see them in the playoffs. However, next year I am tipping my cat to the Los Angeles Dodgers. I know that they just came one game short. I truly believe that this team has what it takes to get there.
I know that you were down hanging out with the Dodgers earlier on in the season. I just want to take the conversation to them, runners-up on this occasion. But does that sort of cloud the achievements that they've put in over the last 12 months? And does that coincide, funnily enough, with Emirates Airline and a little bit of a cash injection?
Yeah, well, it's funny. Emirates Airlines joins the Los Angeles Dodgers. They have had one of their best seasons that I can remember in some time. And it's funny how all that works out. But yeah, the Los Angeles Dodgers, boy, they put together a heck of a ball club out there in Los Angeles. And I just love what they have. They have some of the best pitching. You know, one of the big things that blew up from was their starting pitching. Clayton Kershaw, who everyone says is the best pitcher in the game, didn't really pitch like the best pitcher in the game in the World Series. Yu Darvish, the guy that they went out and got from Texas, he pitched miserably in this World Series. If you have these guys and they show up and they just give you maybe a C-minus effort compared to what they're used to, maybe they're winning the World Series right now. But unfortunately, both these guys didn't really show up and play their best baseball in the World Series. However, with that said, the Los Angeles Dodgers have a ton of good pieces on this team. Justin Turner at third base, Yasiel Puig in right field. These are cornerstones that you can build a whole entire franchise around. So Dave Roberts has all of the pieces there. Everyone is buying into his system. The Dodgers and the front office, they all have the full support. So I do see them coming back next year.
And Magic Johnson, obviously the famed L.A. Laker, is a part owner of the Dodgers.
Right. He's a minority owner of the Dodgers. So they've got a lot of big names out there in Los Angeles. It's a hot ticket in town right now. And I do believe we actually might be seeing some Dodgers here later in the year, but we'll see if that comes on out. We'll see.
Keep an eye on that space. You'll have all the details, hopefully, right here on Dubai Eye 103.8. Quick one, though. Just put me in the picture. So, obviously, off-season now. How long does that go on for? Put into context, they've got a couple of months off?
Yeah, they got a couple months off, and pitchers and catchers have to show up 2 weeks before everyone else to spring training. So if you're a pitcher or a catcher, your summer's a little bit short, so you're going to be getting your holiday time in now with the wife and kids doing all that right now. But, yeah, spring training, everyone goes to Florida or they go to Arizona and they play their spring ball, and it's decide who makes the rosters. Now, keep in mind, these major league rosters are a lot different than any type of sport where there's four different teams. However, the pro teams are the ones we talk about, but there's an A league, a double A league, a triple A league, and a small A team. So there's a ton of baseball getting played in Florida and Arizona to compete to see who can make it onto those teams, and you try to move up the ranks, if you will. The famed quarterback Tim Tebow, former Heisman Trophy winner, former Denver Bronco, beat the Pittsburgh Steelers in the AFC Championship game 10 years ago, is trying his luck at baseball this year. So you saw him in the Mets minor league affiliate, Port St. Lucie. So it'll be interesting to see if he sticks with it next year.
Ross, thanks so much indeed for that. We're going to take a short break, not before I tell you halftime scores. Championship early kickoff, Bristol City taking on Cardiff. Bristol took the lead early doors on the 20th minute goal from Callum O'Dowda. That's been cancelled out by the visitors, Cardiff. They've got one back courtesy of Omar Bogle's left-footed shot from the centre of the box. First half has ended. It's one apiece between Bristol and Cardiff. As yet, though, no goals up in the early kickoff in Scotland. It's St Johnstone 0, Celtic 0, and no goals in the Premier League. Stoke against Leicester, still goalless at the moment. Take a short break. When we come back, we'll have more.
This is The Grill. Get involved with Dubai Eye on Facebook.
Yeah, welcome back to The Grill. Just to let you know, there has been a goal in Spain as well in La Liga. Early kickoff there, Valencia taking on Leganes. And it was Parejo for the home team. David Parejo taking from Valencia, scoring in the 14th minute. So it's Valencia 1, Leganes 0. That's the halftime score over in Spain. That follows on from the results last night from La Liga. Real Betis against Getafe finished 2-2 in that one. So we will, of course, keep an eye on all of those. In terms of, and apparently there is an incident in the Premier League as well. I can't see because all I can see is a big fan in front of me, and that's not Mark Archer.
No, 20 minutes gone. Stoke City 0, Leicester City 0. And there is an incident on the touchline. I'm just trying to work out what's happening. The referee and the referee's assistants are talking to both the managers. We'll bring you more news as we get it from Stoke City there. But Stoke 0, Leicester 0, 22 minutes gone in the Premier League, the early kickoff.
Keep an eye on that one for you, as we are all the other big stories. Just in terms of marking cards, Mark Archer, so I know the Bar's kicking off at 7 o'clock. That'll be one on down here at Barasti. We're just commenting, in fact, off there. What a perfect evening it is for watching sport. It's a bit of a dangerous one, really, because we've got lots of good sport to look forward to. But that's at 7. What time are the other games kicking off?
Rugby-wise, we're talking about. There are action today. I'd say it's the Anglo-Welsh Cup. So there's various matches taking place today. Four matches in the Guinness Pro 14, so we'll bring you them as they get underway. Southern Kings will face Ulster, Edinburgh at home to Ospreys, Cardiff Blues will take on Zabri, and Connick play the South African team, the Cheetahs. Wins last night in the Pro 14 for Munster, Glasgow, and Scarlets. Top 14, there's a few matches, also five matches this afternoon, this evening. So we'll bring you the early kickoffs in the top 14 and also in the Guinness Pro 14 as they get underway this afternoon, Tom. But 7 p.m. is the big kickoff at Twickenham. It's the Barbarians taking on the world champions All Blacks.
Let's hear from the Barbarians coach now, Robbie Deans, as you mentioned, another proud Kiwi who's managing a lot of Kiwis against the Kiwis a little later on in London, of all places. Robbie's thoughts?
It's important because you've only got to see the response of the players who get the opportunity. It's a point of difference from their routine, if you like, their competition grind. And it's unique because it brings people together who ordinarily play against each other in a context where they can really express themselves. I think Adrian Strauss summed it up best. After last weekend when he talked about how he'd essentially fallen out of love with the game and hence retired from international rugby, But after last week, declared he was back in love with the game. And that captures it, you know. And I think this concept, Barbar's World 15 last week, really does capture the essence of rugby, everything that's great about the game.
That's Robbie Deans, who's coaching the Barbarians at the moment. He was talking about, obviously, taking on New Zealand at Twickenham a little later on. But they did play last weekend, in fact. They played against Australia last weekend, down in Australia. Got a bit of a thumping, I think. But good to hear that it's his re-inspired players.
Yeah, I think the players, it's an amazing experience playing for the Barbarians to play against his international teams. And it will be a fascinating afternoon at Twickenham. Steve Hansen, it's the first of four matches for the All Blacks in the North. Well, actually play a midweek match in France, but it's first of four, what you call internationals or test match type rugby. He's rested many players, but they still have lots of players on display. Notably for the All Blacks, Beauden Barrett is back at fly half. He hasn't played much in the last few weeks due to some head injury issues, but he will captain the All Blacks for the very first time. So that's an amazing thing for Beauden Barrett. And then we talked about the Barbars. They have 10 New Zealanders in their starting lineup, but let's just think, they're coached by Robbie Deans. They have Julian Savir on the wing. 54 caps for the All Blacks, 46 tries, the 27-year-old. He'll have a point to prove. He's been upstaged this year by Rico Oani on the left wing. He'll be looking to make a statement, I'm sure, against the All Blacks. And, of course, they have the likes of Stephen Luatua, who was recently an All Black, now playing for Bristol. So lots of players who are either currently were internationals or players were All Blacks that want to make a statement, really. It's not often the New Zealander will get the chance to face the All Blacks, and this is a pretty amazing achievement for those guys.
One Northern Hemisphere player, you said?
Yes, an Italian player who I can't name is playing. And for me, that's such a shame. The Barbars...
Ackerman's on the bench, though.
Yeah.
Doesn't he qualify?
Who's that?
Ackerman.
Well, yeah, I guess you could say.
Plays for Gloucester.
There you go. But the sad thing for me is the Barbars, for many generations, Tom, was almost like the British and Irish Lions playing at home. It was the All-Stars team made up from Irish and Scottish and Welsh and English players and a few splattering of international players playing at home, wearing the famous, you know, the black and white hoops rather than the British-Irish Lions. And it was all about
club socks, wasn't it?
You always wear your club socks. For me, that's what the Barbars should be. And due to the professional era, the players, there should be more Northern Hemisphere players in this team. Not many players get the opportunity to play against the All Blacks, to play against them at Twickenham. I think some of the Northern Hemisphere clubs should have released players. Apparently they tried to get players to come, but they said, no, it's a week off. We're playing Anglo-Welsh matches. The players are tired. It's been a long season. And you get it. Look, the Lions have been down in New Zealand. A lot of those international players haven't had much time off, but it belittles the brand a bit. Do you really want to see New Zealand derby match at Twickenham? Well, 55,000 people do want to see that, but it's a long way to go and watch that match. It would have much more interest for me to see Northern Hemisphere players, whether it be club players, whether it be youngsters. Give them a go. Give them a run out. Nothing to lose, but that's my opinion, humble opinion.
Talking of opinions, let's just get one more before we go to the break. Let's just go to the golf, because I haven't put you in touch of the leaderboards. Let's get the latest from Ross Crist. Where are we going to? Turkey, isn't it?
We're going to go stateside first, Tom. We'll head to beautiful, sunny Sin City, Las Vegas, Nevada, for the Shriners Hospital for Children Open. And it's J.J. Spahn at 11 under in the lead with this one. He's followed by, at 8 under, Kelly Kraft. Then Robert Garris is at 7 under. Aaron Bradley's at 6 under. Patton Krizzle is at 6 under. Not a whole lot of big names in this one at the American side of things. Then elsewhere, it's the Turkish Airlines Open for the European side of things. And Smagetigan-sponsored golfer Shane Lowry alone at 14 under. He's followed by Padre Harrington at 7 under, Justin Rose at 12 under, Eddie Purpel at 12 under, Thomas Peters also at 12 under, Dylan Fratelli at 10 under, Peter Urin at 10 under, Stephen Gallagher at 10 under, and Matthew Southgate at 10 under. Some big news coming out of golf this week. Of course, Tiger Woods is making his another attempt to come back onto the course. He feels healthy enough. He says his back is good enough. And he's also said, he's came out and said that he's hitting the ball as far as he's ever hit it. Now, I don't know if Tiger Woods is deranged at this point in his 12th comeback coming back to golf, or if he's telling us the truth. But he thinks that golf courses need to change the golf ball. They need a flatter golf ball. So basically, right now, the golf ball, you can think of a tennis ball. He wants to turn it into a squash ball.
There we go. And talking of McGettigans, we'll talk rugby league in just a little while. I noticed the other day watching the Rugby League World Cup ongoing, McGettigans are sponsoring the Irish Rugby League team at the moment.
Very good.
All over their shirts.
And you see the Lebanese team is also taking part in the Rugby League World Cup.
We're going to talk about that in the final. Just want to stay with the golf, though, because you've been down at the golf all day.
Yeah, the Fatima Bint Mubarak Ladies Open at the very beautiful Saadiyat Beach Golf Club. Gary Player designed course down there on Saadiyat Island. And we do have a winner. It's just come hot off the press. And it's the Indian player Aditi Ashok has recorded a 3-under par score of 69 today for a one-shot victory. A rounds of 67, 66, 68 and 69. Incredibly consistent across her four rounds. A one-shot victory for Aditi Ashok. Her third LET Ladies European Tour title. She's only been a professional for 2 years. She is one of the hot young sensations in world ladies golf. In second place, one shot back, was Georgia Hall, the English lady, at 17 under par. Camilla Lenarth, the Swedish player, was 16 under par. And then a big name there, we just talked about Tiger Woods. Well, Cheyenne Woods, invited all the way over from USA, was in fourth at 15 under par. So a one-shot win at the Fatima Bint Mubarak Ladies Open for the Indian Aditi Ashok. Congratulations to her. Set round of 69 today, so wonderful victory down there at Saadiyat Beach Golf Club.
Nice low scoring couple of rounds down there. 18 under wins it. Thanks so much indeed for that, boys. We'll have more from you in just a few moments. Let's go to a short break. When we come back, sport live from Barasti.
This is The Grill. Tweet the team at Dubai Eye Sport.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.